Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. I am so excited today to talk with one of our favorite Vashon artists, Brian Fisher. He's well known in the community. He's exhibited here a lot with his prints, his paintings, his assemblage, and he has exhibited throughout the Northwest. I ran into Brian at a wonderful event at the Vashon Center for the Arts. They had something called an artist table where they were inviting known artists in the community to be with a group of people. And I had a chance to talk to Brian. Even in our 5 minutes together, I felt like a world opened up. We started talking about our mutual love of art, and I knew that there was a lot behind what he was saying. So that's what I want to talk about today. And so, Brian, rather than talk about your illustrious background, I'll leave those in the show notes, the places you've exhibited and where you, how you've been teaching and all, and plunge right into the conversation.
Great. I look forward to it.
Sweet. So the first big one, why do you love art?
I think that it is an experience that's authentic, that's true for me. And I think when people come from that point of authenticity, that, you know, whether it's expressed, it can be expressed any way. But for me, it is visual arts. So I'm most myself when I'm making it, even talking about it.
Yeah. You made a short video, maybe before one of your exhibits at the Vashon Center for the Arts, where you said, I don't have much choice about making art. If I can't make something during the day, I can't sleep at night.
This is true.
I thought, that's an artist. Yeah. A lot of people think of art and artists as being able to produce beautiful stuff, especially stuff that sells or stuff that other people recognize as art. But I didn't get the sense that that was art for you. I felt like there was a deeper dimension to it. So how would you say what art is?
It's very personal, obviously. I think that it is something that comes from within and is expressed. Sometimes it's expressed in a visual way. Sometimes, and for me, I'll just speak for myself. And that is how I express myself. So, but the making of it can be, you know, any direction. Maybe my process makes sense if I explain it this way. It's like I have a concept. I have a story, basically. I'll call it, instead of a concept, a story, because I am story-oriented, as I think we all are. And then I think, well, how would I tell that story? And that actually, that little critical leap is then whether I go to sculpture or whether I go to paint, often it's print first and then it becomes something else. But the process then is the unfolding. So, you know, if I think most artists have this thing inside them, they want to share. So maybe that's, to answer your question, maybe that's what art is someone wanting to share something about themselves or some piece of knowledge that they think is important that other people might learn from. And then just the doing of it, the process of it, it's like a magical thing, I think.
And when you are in the doing, one of the things that I wonder about when you are as informed as you are, like you did a series, a magic carpet series, where you focused on different cities, often connected to antiquity. And I bet you had a lot of historical background or knew some of the myths of those cities. So when you start from a concept or information, how do you blend in that inner knowing and the intuition as you move into the process? Because I know if it's all head, it leads to a different kind of product, at least in many forms of art.
I think it's for me, it's back and forth. So I come to a subject either, you know, most of my subjects have been introduced to me through reading from an early age, and we build on that through our lives. You know, those interests that are given you as, and I don't mean lessons per se, but I think of my early education in terms of myth and the classics was my father reading to me.
So your father read you from the classics at an early age?
I think, you know, I've talked to my sister a little bit about this, and I think maybe he had been taking coursework himself when he was doing this, but I came along late in their lives, and he was getting his master's about the time he would have been doing this. At the time, I didn't have any connection to that, but yeah, he read Homer to me. That was my bedtime stories, were the Iliad and the Odyssey, and the Pope version of that, which is supposed to be not a great translation, but that's the one that I grew up listening to. So that kind of story, that kind of subject was introduced early on. And then I would say the whole oral thing in my family was huge. It was pre-television and pre all of that. Well, not exactly, but my parents' generation and certainly my grandparents, they told stories. It was entertainment. It was a way of sharing what was going on around them, and entertainment largely too. The Fisher side of the family had funny stories to tell always. And my mother's side of the family also told stories. Those were more, they fell more into gossip. Actually, both of them were to a certain degree, but educational for a young person too.
Yeah.
So,
do they come from any ethnic background?
No, pretty Northern European. I mean, if that's the ethnicity there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, because some cultures thrive on storytelling, others a little less so. But you were among the lucky ones that your family told stories and read the great stories to you.
I feel very fortunate. My oldest brother, another part of that was my oldest brother lost his sight at age 3. And so my parents read aloud to him and to us, and then he had recorded books that as a young person I listened to when he was 14 years older than I am, so I think that's right. Anyway, that I listened to as he was listening to those. So the oral part of my process is real important, and then the story part of it is, I think, as I said earlier, I think it's important to all of us. That's why we're having this interview right now. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that you're absolutely right, because I want the stories of living a creative life. I want to know the stuff of life and how it comes through people. So when as a child did you feel the urge to make art or need to translate this mythology you were hearing into something tactile and visual?
The other component to my dad's education was my mother was going to art school at the same time. So my earliest memories really are of making art with her. That was at a time where I guess it was okay. At least I went to classes with her. So I made pottery with her in the college.
How old were you?
I think the one clay piece I still have, it's maybe could be called a toothpick holder. It's about that size. I think I was 5. So
amazing.
Yeah.
And so you got in on it long before that question of, are you an artist and do you have
talent? I always have made art.
Yeah. You just did it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did people start enjoying your art? Were you supportive for that, or did you just do it because you felt like doing it?
I clearly thought this was something to do and that I liked to do. I would say my father probably discouraged it as a career. That's why I have an architectural degree. But I've never not made art through my life. It's been always a present thing.
This is Sally Fox on Voice of Vashon, and today we're talking with artist Brian Fisher. When you went to college, it was in architecture rather than fine arts?
Yes. Oh. I took lots of art classes too, printmaking primarily.
Okay. And then did you practice? I know you have, or still have a business as an architectural illustrator. Is that right?
Yes. It's kind of wound itself down with COVID and my age. But yes, for years, my husband, Peter Chris, and I had a company called Presentation Arts, whose emphasis was on, originally, it was on pre-built architecture, and particularly interior architecture, because there weren't very many companies that just dealt with that. So we did that in Dallas, and we moved it to Seattle, that company to Seattle, and then to the island.
Tell me more about what an architectural illustrator does, because, you know, people think, oh, you just take pictures, photographs, or now they probably think, oh, you know, hack something in AI, but there's another quality that comes through when you actually have an illustration. What is that, and why do people use that?
Well, at the time that I graduated, which was 1980, that was kind of the tail end of what I would say were architects who could draw. And so there was already a niche there. And for, you know, a dozen, 20 years, I guess, basically, there was a need pre-computer to create pre-built illustrations. So I would take plans, or in the case of interiors, plans and carpet samples, wall samples, color samples, wood samples, and put that all together as a three-dimensional watercolor rendering, so that a client or a bank, or, you know, if the client was trying to get money from a bank, then they would take this illustration to the bank and say, this is what we want to do. Most often it was an architectural or interior architecture firm that was designing and then wanted to show the client what their suite was going to look like. Most of what we did was commercial. And the economy kind of dictated where that went through the years. We did a lot of office. And I started kind of my career at Helmuth Tabata Kassebaum doing this. And I did a lot of renderings of bathrooms and elevators.
Oh, dear. But, interesting.
But yeah, but those were what they were, you know, space designers, basically. And that was where the money in high rises was being spent in that locale, Dallas, at that time. But as the economy changed, and as, you know, I found new clients, I did everything over the years, which was actually the best part about that whole job experience, was you got to draw everything, anything, from people, you know, and as realistic as possible was my approach, you know, people to objects. So floral bouquets that are sitting on a table in a dining room with everything behind it. So or a room full of chairs and tables, etc. So
it sounds like you had fantastic drawing experience, but did you sometimes feel drawn out when it came to making your own work?
Actually, I got tired sometimes, but my approach to my personal art was, so with the illustration, it was to depict three-dimensional world. And my personal art was much more about my internal world. And the three-dimensional part of it didn't matter so much. Sometimes it entered into the composition, but one kind of complemented the other, was my experience. Actually, I learned skills in the illustration biz that I brought to my art, you know, that I would not have had any other way.
I remember you talking about that at dinner, and it was so interesting, because some people who are trying to pursue a creative life say, you know, go mop floors or something, do something that doesn't tax your brain and doesn't require much, so that you can focus on what you need to focus on in your art or your writing. But you managed a combo where your architectural work could finance your fine art,
yeah,
and also enhance it, because you had a whole nother set of skills.
Yeah, and then it went both ways, I will say too. When I'd have a chunk of time where I could really concentrate on my art, and I'm thinking when specifically at a time where I was painting in oil a lot, that whole color sense I brought back to the illustration. There was kind of a period where my illustrative work became very much more like my art. I tried to format things in a more artistic way, and the color palette changed too. So, and this is, I mean, since we're on a lot on this subject, different regions of this is obvious if you really think about it, but different regions have different styles and expectations for how they tell stories. So, in illustration and in Texas and in the South, there was this expectation of gouache, which is an opaque watercolor process. And that's how I told those stories, was in that medium primarily, and some pencil. And when I moved to this part of the country, gouache was not a thing that people liked so much, and they wanted it looser. So I developed a watercolor style. So I never had done so much watercolor until I actually moved to the Northwest.
Interesting. So the medium actually dictates part of the story.
It does. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
When you're doing illustration, you're working for a client, and ultimately the client has the say on whether it works and it doesn't work. You know, when you're working for yourself and doing fine art, are you able to detach from that piece of, will they like it?
Yes.
Will it sell?
It's one of the reasons I like doing it.
Yeah.
Only a few times have I had people actually recommend that I do something that would be more, sellable, I guess. And that's not, I mean, that is because I removed that as a consideration to begin with. I could do what I wanted to do, and I still do that. And I do occasionally think, well, who really wants to know more about this, or who might like this? But I'm the client, so I please myself. Not that I don't do commissioned things from time to time, but those are generally out of somebody seeing something that's no longer available, and I have worked on a series. Typically, I work in series, and so there might be something else that they would like as well. Or if not, maybe I can do something that's similar, but not, you know, the same.
So. It's such a wonderful freedom, because one of the things that I've experienced in making art is trying to work the balance between the inner urge and the discovery and the following my own path, and that niggling thought, like, is this any good? Will they like it? Or ultimately, will it sell? And it's not like I've been selling a lot, but trying to work that balance so it doesn't get swayed over to that place where you begin to lose the inner joy, the inner impulse, the spirit of what you're doing.
Yeah. No, there is a balance. I do agree. There's, yeah, and my recommendation is follow your, you know, it's your path, and follow your, well, Campbell said, follow your bliss. And it's kind of like that in making what brings you joy, what comes from within, instead of someone telling you this is the world you live in and you must do this.
That's great guidance, especially if you have a way to cover your rent already established, because I think it puts a special pressure if somebody's trying to meet their mortgage with their paintings.
Right.
That's a really hard, place to be.
It is. And it's a different, I'm not the person to probably have that conversation with, because I haven't had to do that based on, I'm kind of, I like the mix. There are many things I would have done in my life only if I had more time to do all of them, you know. You kind of have to pick and choose at some point, particularly as we get older. And I'm pretty happy with my choices, because this is really, it comes down to what I make now and what I've made then. And it's been a pretty true line through. Then I look, as I said, I look and think, oh, I wish I would have known more about that at this point, or could have chased that a little bit more. So,
this is Sally Fox on Voice of Vashon, and today we're talking with artist Brian Fisher. I remember visiting your studio on the Vashon Artist Tour.
I remember when you came.
Oh, that's nice. And if I remember right, you had a great collection of books.
I did.
And I had a sense that you were curious, that you were a learner, and that you were interested in antiquity. Am I right on that?
Yes, I would say that's true. Yeah, I think that more people need to understand where we came from. So that would be a part of the story. People have to be curious enough to ask, or curious enough to look at titles that I give things. But that's part of my story, is like, we have a rich history that seemingly people don't know much about. can glide along and through life with all the cares and worries that we have to deal with, and don't have to address that, at least at on a day-to-day level. But it's important because it has informed how we came to be here, you know.
Mm. I saw on your website some beautiful pictures of your Magic Carpet series.
Uh-huh.
And in that, you had descriptions of some of the ancient cities that were represented. And I found that fascinating because there were cities. There was one in Armenia. I don't know Armenia. I never heard of it. And it,
the
then
Pink
I thought,
City. Yeah.
Oh, my God, there's a whole world there.
Yeah.
Of history and mythology and story. And I was going to find out about it through your it was print, wasn't it? Or was it a painting?
That was a print, a monotype print collage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was the impulse behind the Magic Carpet series?
So often one series leads to the other. And one of the reasons I like myth as subject is that's a never ending thread. It is, you just pull it here and it, you just keep going with it. And the Magic Carpet Ride came kind of, it's a blend of a couple of series, but it came out of another series I am still working on. And I've, the two times of it, which is a series about Jin, as in genie. And the two times I've exhibited anything on that subject, that it's all sold. So it's like an ongoing subject that I never get quite enough for a show out of, but I have a bunch of pieces in process. But when I was working on that, I started imagining dropping into these no longer, most of them are not, the one that you mentioned in Armenia, which is...
What was the city name again?
That's what I'm trying to remember. It's the capital of Armenia. It is, it'll come to me. But dropping in on these cities, most of them have not been around for a while, but are old. I mean, as in, you know, 4,000 to 6,000 kind of year old. So the piece that you saw at the artist table event was one of those. And, you know, there were several there, not there, but several in that series that were about the cities that were built at the delta of the Nile. And that were important port cities 4,000 years ago, but have sunken through seismic activity and the fact that they built stone temples on top of sand, basically. They've sunken into the mud there. But and only since the 80s, 90s have they really discovered where these cities that are referred to in documents, but now they've really located where they are. And there's some excavation, but a lot of it's underwater, so it's hard to do. So... yes, antiquities are, I think, very interesting.
Yeah. And when you're working on, I remember Petra was one of the cities, because
yeah.
I recognized that name.
Yeah.
Another pink city. Is there a way that you put yourself into that city in some way when you're starting to work on your print?
Yeah. It's like Petra is a good example, actually. I mean, there's a color that's associated with it as well.
What color? Is it a pink?
It's a very, the city, it's, and there are lots of photographs of Petra.
And I mean, in Jordan, right?
It's in Jordan. And everyone might be familiar with it if you think about one of the Indiana Jones movies where it's filmed there. But there's one of the main buildings there is, they refer to it as the treasury, but I think it was a tomb. A lot of those are tombs. But there was a thriving city there at one time. But anyway, to put myself within the context of this sedimentary rock that's been carved into these classical shapes. So there's formality and discovery. And the entrance to it, you wind your way through towering rock cliffs to enter the inner, what's most familiar to people is this inner courtyard where they're, I think it's called the treasury of, it starts with an A. If I knew we were going to be talking about this, I would have looked it up.
We could do another.
Anyway, but to be surrounded by this soft, beigey pink rock inspires the color palette. So all of those pieces that are collage monotypes, I printed with generally two or three cities in mind as monotypes. So I was creating texture and color. So they might go through the press, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 times.
What is a monotype? Sorry about this.
So a monotype, its basic meaning is there's only one like it, a mono print.
Oh, so you're not, it's not like a lithograph where there are 200 signed.
It's not a print series.
Oh, okay.
They're generally made with an open plate.
Okay.
But it really could be a print made in any print fashion, but there's only one of them. My approach to monotype print is, you know, I wasn't familiar with it either until I moved to the island and became a part of Quartermaster Press. And my good friend Ilse Reimnitz prints in this way of many, many, many layers. We teach classes together frequently. And that approach is the approach that I take when I'm making my monotype stuff. So I'm printing for texture, I'm printing for color, and for accidents that are aha moments. So then I take those aha moments, hopefully, and then recompose them into these magic carpet rides, which refer to a textural thing, but also to the cities. And in the case of Petra, color specifically, but texture too. So.
Wow, it's a whole process. I mean, you say magic carpet ride, I can feel the ride just as you talk about it. The different layers, the history that you're bringing in, the knowledge, but you're not translating it directly. It's coming through you in a different way.
Yeah, it's kind of like listening to, you could say, I could probably describe everything the same way and talk about a piece of music. It's just all that stuff is, I am the filter for all of that. And, you know, whether I'm doing the collage part of the thing or if it's a direct print or if it's a painting, I'm the filter.
Wow. Moving into a different area, and forgive me because we can cut this if you don't want to go there, but you and I have both faced losses this year.
Yes.
I lost my sister, you lost your partner.
Yeah.
And I found that there was a period of time where my studio was saving me because I could go into it and I could let the world just be, and I didn't have to be any particular way, and I could let the art speak to me. Uh-huh. And it was so... so important. How is loss affecting you and your art?
It is, you know, it's not in the way that I expected, but none of this is, I will say. My husband Peter's, the nitty gritty down to this is it moment stuff had to do with art and my making of it and his concern that I be able to continue doing that. So that's, I mean, fabulous, and I feel supported as I always have been by him. And I will take that into my studio, but just since he's died so recently, I've had a hard time being in my studio. I've become completely emotional, so that's fine for a few minutes, but I can't sustain it enough to actually make something.
Yeah.
So that's where I am with that right
now. Yeah, and I would say, you know, grief takes us in many different directions, and not being able to make art, especially when it was so key to your partnership,
yes,
would be a completely reasonable response as well. And at the same time, who knows? Who knows what the future will hold? Because I have a feeling it deepens us. It's the wound, you know, and you're a storyteller. And in a story, there's always a wound.
I believe that too. Most of what we were just describing in terms of the magic carpet ride, that's kind of fitting for all of this as a metaphor, but that is out of my curiosity, and what will come next I know will be more personal. I started a series called Leo and Lang that is already a little bit more that, and I knew when I started it during COVID that it would be probably the story that I would work on for the rest of my life. So
what is that story?
It's a fictive same-sex couple love story. So
wonderful.
I had a man in Prague carve wooden marionettes for me. The first ones I got in I think 2019. And then during COVID, I had him carve a friend because there was a friend that was critical to this story. It's not biographical per se, but it does have that component to it. And it has some family history to it. And then because they're puppets, they stand still when I draw them. And so they also are more three-dimensional than most of the artwork that I do. And it's an opportunity for me to include, you know, little world history. I can put them in any place that I want in time and in history, although they do have a linear, there's a linear quality to the story. They're both born in the same nest in the Netherlands in 1880. I think I finally said it in 88, or maybe it's 89. They have to be a certain age to be certain places in my the history I want to
Amazing.
Tell.
Amazing. So, yeah.
Yeah.
You already have, aren't there some prints that you have online that have the puppets in them?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've probably completed maybe 8 or 9 prints already.
Mm-hmm.
And I have right now about 3 in process, 2 etchings and a linocut.
You're really inspiring me because I love story and I've told stories, but I always think of stories as a verbal thing, standing up in front of people and performing a story. But you're telling stories in a wholly different way.
Yeah, and you know, and interestingly, I'm not, although I do, there's a part of me that likes to write about what I'm working on. It is the visual thing that I always connect to. And the puppets are that way too for me. People have said, well, are you going to, you know, do plays with these? And it's like, no, they're really, that's not my interest at all.
Like, you know. Yeah, you have your own path with it, your own relationship with it. And how great, because there are puppet shows out there.
Yeah.
The world has a lot of them.
Which I appreciate. I love that. Too. Yeah.
Well, one of the things I also note about you is that you have contributed a lot to the art community on the island. Weren't you head of Vashon Island Visual Artists for a while?
Yeah, for several years. Yeah.
What does that mean to you to be part of a community, and how has that been a part of your path?
It's kind of my history on the island. I did not know what was going on here, really, when I moved here. It was proximate to Tacoma and Seattle, and it was my vision of what the Northwest was supposed to be about when I moved from Dallas. And I made a couple friends that weren't artists, but who encouraged me to participate first in what was the weekend market, Saturday market at that time, which had a larger component of craft and art. And through that, I made connections to Barn Works. Sharon Munger, good friend, invited me to be part of Barn Works because at that time I was playing with watercolor and silkscreen. So I suddenly found myself in this community that was like, oh my God, they're, you know, throw a rock and you hit an artist. So I remember actually Peter loved this t-shirt someone made for a while that said, I'm not an artist. Because Vashon has a wealth of talent, a wealth of creative people. And so it's hard not to be involved. And that's, I'm just grateful actually to be here at this place and time and surrounded by so many people making things.
Yeah. I know what you mean. When I was never a gardener until I came to the island. And then it was like, did they put it in the water? You know, because all of a sudden I was just like this rabid gardener. And then sure enough, 15 years or 16 into the life here, I actually was a confirmed non-artist. You know, I was like Saul in the Bible.
Oh, uh-huh.
You know, I hate this stuff. I'm not that.
Deny.
And then all of a sudden, something happened. It actually happened at Jerry Peterson's watercolor class
at the senior center. Yeah.
Where I said, that's not true. You can't say that about yourself anymore. And it was like I could feel the ice falling down.
Wonderful.
Because that myth that I lived for 60 years was suddenly false, and I didn't want it anymore. But it also makes me really sensitive to the fact that a lot of people grew up with that myth, that their artists are very special people, they're unique, there are only a few of them, and most of us don't qualify.
Yeah, that is a myth. Well, it's actually not a myth. It's a falsehood. It doesn't. Myths, I think, tend to have a kernel of truth,
yes.
Or they at least are an attempt to explain the unexplainable. And the thing that people carry around with them that says I cannot do this is, you know, there are obviously people who are bent one direction or another, but everyone has that thing in them that is a creative being that wants to make things, and whether it's, you know, whatever it is, if it's music, or it's a visual arts, it's painting, it's there, and, you know, so.
And here, you know, and I love, you had a phrase that you used, making art is core to what makes us human. Art is core to what makes us human, and I'm sure you mean, you know, music and anything that you are making and all. Do you want to say more about that, what that phrase means to you?
I mean, I think that our journey is finding out that. That's the question what is core to us? What's important to us? And when you don't include a creative aspect to that, I think your life tends to, I think you look around, we can look around us and say, these people they're not tethered to something that's true for them. And they act and react and ways that seem incomprehensible to me. I'm passing judgment. But I often think it's like, well, they're not expressing their true selves. Or I actually, even people that, now again, I'm probably passing judgment. It's like that I think that are so busy, and I think, well, how do they have any time to do anything meaningful if this is all that they're doing, this and now this and now this and going here and going there kind of thing. It's like, art gives me the opportunity, at least, I'll just again speak for me, to express who I feel I am, and also to, it's been my opportunity to look for who I am, what that path is. You know, it is a path, it's not just a point that you're occupying. You know, we're here for, as is obvious to me right now, particularly for too short a period of time, and if we have a job, it is to find out why. Who we are in this moment, and why we are, and contribute in a way that is just sharing what's important to oneself, but hopefully sharing in a way that's important to other people in their growth and expression of who they are.
I know. I'm 72. How old are you?
I am 67.
Yeah, it's kind of same zone. My journey into art was very informed by aging, because I said to myself, you know, our bodies are going to disintegrate, and we're watching people, we're losing people. So we know that it is short. Why not pick something to fill my life with that I can keep going with throughout all my life? Because even if I'm handicapped, there'll be something that I can observe or create or use my imagination to conjure up, I hope, until the very end of my life. So why aren't people thinking like that and saying, we should be investing in imagination?
Yes, I agree.
yeah. What else should I, let me ask you one more question. I don't know what your spiritual background is, but do you ever feel like there's something that comes through you when you're making art, or that it's informed by something that feels spiritual? I don't want to put any dogma or anything around that, but it feels like a spirit.
I don't know. I feel like when I'm connected to what I'm doing and doing what it's a circle connected to, that I'm joyous, happy, involved, tired, all of those emotional things that I see as positive things, that might be spirit. I'm too much a reader of myth to have a religion. Uh-huh. So I don't attribute it to, you know, if I attribute it to one, I'd have to attribute it to many gods and goddesses. So I think that we're all stardust, and we all are this organic connected thing. Yeah. So
when you talk though about, you know, following your bliss, or that everybody has that something.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I can hear. I mean, not in a religious or dogmatic way, but just feeling like there's more to us.
Yeah.
That maybe we're here to discover and explore.
Oh, definitely. I think that there is more. There is that, yeah. There's more to us. It's more than what we see.
Yeah. So what's on your plate right now? You have something coming up in July?
Yes, July 28th. There will be a big print event at Vashon Center for the Arts in the Blue Heron parking lot. And what it will be about is there, I think, around 30 artists who will have contributed to make this, I'll pull all this off. And this is a concept that several of us have been working on for a while, and I was really promoting, and I taught some classes earlier in Lineika just to get enough people to be interested enough. I should say, all with the intention of bringing print on the Vashon to really to the fore, people's attention. There are two events this year, this one, big print event, and there will be one in November that's an Island Prints event or exhibition. That will include a Oaxacan artist, print artist, part of. Anyway, that's in November. But July, we will print with steamroller, 36 by 36 inch lino cut prints. So we're driving over the lino cut to print it to paper. And those prints are either, I think there are five artists that are actually carving 36 by 36. There are several that are carving 18 by 36. I'm one of those that will then be recomposed for 36 by 36 with two 18 by 18. So a lot of artists are carving 18 by 18. A lot of people that have not carved a lot before felt like the big was too big to take on, but they felt confident enough to do the 18 by 18, and they found out even that's daunting. So it will be quite an accomplishment to pull all of this off.
I think it's wonderful. And you're doing it in the parking lot of the center?
Yes, the parking lot of the Blue Heron, lower parking lot. Mm-hmm. So the southern parking lot of the Vashon Center for the Arts complex. And it will begin early and probably end by, the official hours I think are 10 to 4, but we will be there early and have to be there a little bit later to get as much printing done as we're trying to do. And then the prints will be on display during the Summer Arts Festival at Vashon Center for the Arts.
I think it's totally inspired because you're bringing a whole community of artists and giving them an opportunity to do something, but you're also creating something for the community that people can observe and understand, ask questions, and be a part of.
Hopefully so, yeah.
And then it will be displayed, and we have to do a hats off to the Vashon Center for the Arts for really...
Oh my goodness, yes. Yeah, they are remarkable, and I want to mention Lynn Ann in particular. She's so supportive of artists, and the Summer Arts Festival alone is because it moves through there. There will be hundreds of artists showing their work in one summer, so it's a lot of consideration going into hanging, and then everyone that's making things. It's just an incredibly creative whirlwind.
Yeah, and it's a wonderful commitment because I can remember years ago there was a consideration that the Center for the Arts was exhibiting stuff from off island that was more in the established art category.
Uh-huh.
When we have an island full of artists, and now I feel like there's a really good blend
that
they're really honoring that artistic spirit that's on the island in a number of ways.
I agree. Yeah.
So I'm going to be there, and I will promote that, and we'll put that on the show notes at Voice of Vashon so people can...
The theme is the nature of Vashon. So what you will see are people's reflections on what nature of Vashon means to them. So plants and animals, there might be some wacky stuff because, you know, Vashon's kind of wacky.
That is fantastic. We'll put that in the show notes. And is there anything I failed to ask you that you'd like to share?
I have enjoyed the conversation. I think we've covered it.
Me too, totally. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon 101.9 FM for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.